Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This is G.R. Mobley, and this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. As you know, you are listening to the only show that is providing the actual and the tangible solution in getting the federal government back into compliance with the Constitution. We do not have a problem with the Constitution itself. It does not require an amendment. Well, it may be, but we have to get them into compliance to determine what we really need to amend. Because our greatest problem, and if you understand, any of you that are married, and you basically just said in one of you or your spouse all of a sudden started spending money on unauthorized things. So let's say you have a tight budget. You only have so much money coming in, like our government. And so you need to have a tight ship. There are certain things that you were supposed to spend money on, your bills and those things that you actually have been given the power to do. And in the Constitution's case, it's those enumerated powers. Therefore, if you understand how much debt we are spending or actually assuming from this unconstitutional spending, it's just like your spouse literally taking running rickshaw with your checkbook and writing checks for all sorts of things that are frivolous in your opinion. Of course, they're frivolous, but even more importantly, they're things that you. She doesn't, you don't, you do not have the authority to be writing those checks. More specifically, the federal government does not have the state's authority to be writing checks for education, to be writing checks for welfare, to be writing checks for health care. I saw in the news that Obama basically told or nudged Trump to go ahead and rename it Trump Care and make it work. Obviously, he knew it was going to fail. He knew it was actually designed to fail so that it could create the impetus or the drive for a single-payer system. We are still on the path for a single-payer system, and the only process of getting us off that path is Republic Review. If you are concerned with the collapse of our government and our society and literally being folded into a globalist socialism, then we have to start getting organized. I'm actually organized. I just need you to start pitching in. So I'm going to grovel a little early. Don't worry, I'll grovel a couple more times. But you got to get involved. You've got to get out there and you've got to start getting people aware and attuned to this concept of auditing the Constitution, going in and saying, where did you have the authority to write these checks? We never gave you this authority. Stop it. And as a matter of fact, one of these days I will get Bob Schultz on this show and he will talk about the precedents that was set in the energy development in Washington State when Washington tried to, unconstitutionally outside of their purview, go and create a couple of new nuclear power plants, something like that. And come to find out, because they didn't have the authority, the court basically said to those who were the creditors and those that were owed money, sorry, you were basically doing business with an agency that didn't have the authority to do that, so you're not due any money. There's already precedence for that. That could be a very bad precedence. It is not my design to actually recommend that we go down that path. It is my recommendation that we try to do everything we can to pay for and to actually to meet our financial obligations. If we don't meet our financial obligations, then I believe we are going to have real problems. I don't know very many people that can get over trust when you've been cheated on something that you thought was a legitimate deal. So I think that we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot. But I also look at what our potential is as a nation when we get all of these globalist Agenda 21 restrictions off of our back, as well as federal restrictions. We could literally unleash our economy and be in a position to literally lead the United States down this path of prosperity that nobody could even fathom. There are so many states that are being straddled with all sorts of unconstitutional and actually just questionable regulations and laws. That the reason we're dealing with all of these fires in the western side of the United States is because of these federal regulations and laws. You've got to be kidding me. These things are good? Obviously, they're not. And so let's move forward. The number to call in, and the lines are open, it's 215-867-8255. Again, that is 215-TOP-TALK. And so I will also let you know that I am still working on that that article, and I'm really trimming it down. I'm trying to get it away from the 28-page article so that people can look at it and go, well, that's kind of reasonable. I guess I'll take the time to read that. And I'll be posting it in a PDF on Mobius Drip Press, because that's where I'm trying to put my literature and articles, books, and that type of content. So anyway, it's a good time to grovel again. And so if you actually have money, if you have if you have computers, if you have phones, and you have the ability to get engaged, then all you've got to do is send me an email. And I appreciate those who have already gotten involved. And as a matter of fact, if there's another way you want to get involved, you can always go to the Constitution Club and join the Constitution Club as well. They're obviously in the corner for reclaiming the Republic, and they've got all sorts of great articles. They've got good education and content and so forth. So that's another way that you can get involved. There are a multitude of ways that you can get involved. If you're in Southern California, there's the Constitution Association. Nationwide, there is the We the People Foundation as well. If you want to start getting physically organized into groups and working with people in a live fashion, there are quite a few different organizations that are getting behind Republic Review. So if you want to help me directly, then just send me an email. It's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And since I'm going to be flying through, because I do have a lot of review of the ratification debates. I'm going through the Virginia ratification debates today. And so as I try to do, I try to go through the news, and I actually did. I found a couple of articles that are kind of worth mentioning, but in all honesty, there is no sign in the news, even today, that the federal government is going to step down and get out of its business of violating the Constitution. It's going to continue doing this until we take action. And that's my bottom line question. What is it going to take for you to finally get involved and actually take back our Constitution? We are on a path of capitulation. There is no way. There's no way we can sustain this spending. There's no way we can sustain this direction of more and more regulations. We are on a fast track of failure. If you look at any and every other society that has had this level of government involvement in the citizens' lives, it never bodes well. It always ends up in collapsing and or seizing the liberties and the sovereignty of the people, and literally taking despotic powers and despotic actions. 9 times out of 10, those types of changes in society bring with it, in its wake, a lot of death. When Lenin and his Bolshevik revolution was finished in Stalin's tenure, millions died. Mao, millions died. Pol Pot, millions died. It's not a good transition. And I'm going to tell you that it will probably go in the exact same path as what has transformed in all of these other nations. So with that, I would just tell you that now is the time, if you're going to start getting involved, start getting informed, continue listening, and continue letting people know that there's actually a show that is prescribing an actual solution. And that solution is as simple as this, as the one word it is, or it is based upon, and that word is audit. The Constitution is a contract. The states are the stakeholders, and inherent in contract law, period. The stakeholders can always step in when they feel their contract is being violated, and they can audit their subcontractor. Do not think that the federal government is the superior in this relationship. They are only superior in those enumerated powers that were delegated to them. The states remain sovereigns and superior in all other things. That's why I tell you that if there is no mention or no enumerated power on healthcare, no enumerated power on marriage, no enumerated power on education, and all of these social programs, then the states are superior. The states can easily step in, and they need to step in. They need to become educated. And that's why I tell people there's 5,445 state legislators that I need to educate. And in the magnitude of 330 million, that is a little teeny drop in the bucket. It's a fraction. So that's where my focus is, and that's what this show is dedicated for, as you know. And as you know, I'm up at a hard break. So with that, I will be back in just a couple of minutes with some news and the ratification debate. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And going into the break, I wanted to start talking about the change of the seasons. As a matter of fact, I kind of noted today, as I was speaking with my beautiful wife, that it was obvious that the sun is getting at a lower elevation, or it's getting going southerly because of the tilting of the axis. And so I also associate this time of year with a lot of hyperbole. And I know that a lot of my friends, I don't know if we've all of a sudden become divided to where people are just so sensitive they don't even talk about it anymore because they don't want to get attacked because they still may be fanatics about the NFL. But apparently, the NFL had a season opener yesterday. And so I was completely unaware of that. And that's just due to the fact that almost all of my friends over the years, we used to spend a lot of time over the end of the summer time frame, when, as soon as preseason kicked off, there was all sorts of hyperbole and taunts and pontificating the outcome of the coming year. And now it just seems like no one even cares anymore about whatever these overpaid brats are doing or even capable of. Now, I did read some news I want you to know about in the NFL, and I thought it was very significant because I want to put this into context. Now, I don't know if you knew this, but former Dallas running back Joseph Randall, who was in Kansas, was just arrested for rape. It's another one of those things that we try to, you know, give the elitists in our society a pass. Too often we tend to look the other way because, oh, you know, they're so good for the team. I remember Ben Roethlisberger had all sorts of problems. And it's just like we continually want to give these people a pass. Now, I've said this before. I truly believe that we do not have an equality in justice because I believe that the bail, if let's say you have a DUI and let's say you're a minimum wage worker, you only make so much money in a year, and your bail to get out from a traffic accident, let's say you hit somebody and they died, and your bail to get out would be more than you would make over several years. But interestingly enough, if an NFL player was in the same situation, they would pay the same bail, which is only a fraction of their yearly salary. Are you telling me that justice is blind and we have an equal system? No. I believe that we need to revamp our penal system and our process for bail, period. It has to be representative of the individual's worth at the time. And so you should be able, if let's say the person doesn't work, let's say he's an investor. Well, then you have to go over his capital investments, what he's capable of, and you know his average income by his tax returns and so forth, and how he's burying stuff. And then you come up with, you know, a reasonable bail for that person, which would be a punitive bail, because bail is supposed to be punitive. You just did something really bad. You should be paying for it. And when the elitists can quickly write a check out, they've got multiple accounts, and I'll just use this account to pay for this. That's not right. It's not equal, and it's not fair. And if you want social justice, then we have to start looking at it maybe in that context instead of the socialism social justice, that all people are treated equally by the law, period. And so just something to kind of chew on, because that's always been to me a big hypocrisy, because I know that when I was active duty in the Marine Corps, I was only making so much money and I made my mistakes. And when I made a mistake, it was very costly for me. And I could just imagine how much life would be easier if I had millions of dollars in my account, and that would have been nothing to me. Whether it was, I remember one time I was working on my car, which I should never have done, trying to work on the carburetor, ended up getting on the bike, going to the store and hitting a kid on my bike, and I got hurt and he got really hurt, almost died. And so I guess I was a projectile in the dark. He didn't see me, I didn't see him. So it was a big mistake. Didn't mean it, but the cost and the ramifications, if I would have been in the civilian life or what have you, could have been very costly. But if I had millions of dollars, it would have been nothing to me. And it's not like I was even drinking at the time. But the fact of the matter is, I know how people just don't necessarily go out and say, you know, I'm going to get drunk and hit somebody. Nobody does that. I can tell you, my father, just a little aside, my father was successful. He was very successfully motivated. He used to have a sign that in his bedroom that said, "Today I will operate at 212 degrees Fahrenheit." And what that means is that is the optimum potential of water. And so it was his signal of always telling himself that he is going to operate at his optimum capability. And, you know, that is a motivator. That is something that he sees and gets him thinking and starting his day. I know lots of people start their day with all sorts of things, reading scriptures. My folks did that as well. And so there are lots of things we need to do, but nobody really says, "Today I'm going to get up and abuse my kids. Today I'm going to get up and do something really bad." And so life happens, it becomes dynamic, we make mistakes, but when we cross that line and have made that type of a mistake, when we've made the choice to put our keys in a car, in this particular case, we've actually decided to, you know, force ourselves upon somebody and, you know, get charged with rape, like this NFL player, then that's a huge mistake, and there should be some punitive cost to that, and hopefully they will give him a bail that would be set. And they're not going to, because our court system isn't designed that way. So I will stop my rant. I'll just let it go. But I want you to ruminate on this, because I want you to start thinking in things not as fairly, but in the most equitable possible way, because there are economic impacts that have to be asserted when you have committed a crime. And if it's going to be punitive, I'm telling you, writing a $250,000 check to a person that makes, you know, millions of dollars a year is nothing. It is literally, it's nothing. And so let me move on to another story in the news. I'm not sure if you heard, but they have identified the person that was actually caught paying cash to protesters and he's apparently a social justice lawyer, not just a warrior, but a lawyer, who works for the Center for Population Democracy. This guy's name is Vinay Krishnan, and he also works at this Center for Popular Democracy, and they receive the bulk of their money from Soros. The Center for Popular Democracy announced last May that it was setting up an $80 million anti-Trump network. Are you kidding me? And so the Democrats are colluding with organizations that are literally trying, and this organization in this 32 states, this $80 million network, they're trying to set up an organization that's goal is to oppose voter ID law so that anybody and everybody can come here. Remember, I've said this before. Why don't we just send everybody's ballots in everybody's states out to China and over to Russia and to all of our enemies who want to topple this nation, and let them vote in our system as well? Since, you know, it's not fair that those people that can, you know, have the ability to just meander across our borders to be able to get access to voting. We, you know, those people that can't, you know, we have to be fair to them as well. And that's exactly what the Democrats want. They want us to collapse via these enemies who they're giving votes to, who have no appreciation, they have no skin in the game, and they don't know what they're doing. They are just tools for these evil people. And so anyway, the real point that I'm trying to drive here is the fact that the Democrats have been colluding with these individuals and organizations that are literally working to undermine not our democracy, but our constitutional republic and our rule of law. And these people need to be thrown. As a matter of fact, Congress really needs to seriously consider a 2018 Tory Act, just like January 2nd, 1776 Tory Act, that we start deporting any of these people that are literally trying to undermine. We incarcerate them first and then send them to the communist country of their choice, because then we're just done with them. And ban them from ever coming onto American soil or American properties and or interests like embassies and so forth. And so let them know that if they come back, they will be shot. Another problem that I have, and I've talked about this a lot. I know Trump is announcing more tariffs on China. He just needs to create an automated system that goes across every single item that is... this, it may seem complicated, but in computer speak, this is so easy to do that they can just create a monitoring system that the computer actually monitors all the prices and actually dictates what the impost will be so that we can equalize this whole playing about targeting this particular economic sector or that sector across the board with China. And we should do this with every country. That way, we don't have to play economic warfare with tariffs anymore. We just have an equalized impost, and that would be sufficient. It would literally take away their ability to try to start targeting politically very specific industries like they've been doing. And as we've heard about in the past few months from the G8 and going forward. So anyway, I'm at a hard break, so I'll be right back with some ratification debates. And so please stay tuned. I'll be right back. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Yeah, so I just had somebody hit me up on a DM on Facebook, and they laughed at the irony of the NFL trying to continue taking the knee when they're talking about all these, you know, unfair blacks being arrested and so forth, when one of their own just gets arrested and popped for rape in Kansas. So that's really tragic. And the crime itself is reprehensible, repugnant. And if this person is guilty, I hope Mr. Randall goes away for a long time. One more thing to point out before I start reading some of these highlights out of the ratification debates, which is basically Madison, Nicholas, and a few others out of Virginia's ratification debate. I'm not sure how you feel, but it's really nice to see our former presidents have living the life of luxury and being able to literally do all sorts of things. Since Bush Sr., they have been traveling around advocating for the globalists and so forth, and they've really become the anti-American presidents. And so why is it that we, the taxpayers, have to pay for their Secret Service detail, especially when they're traveling around the world promoting globalism and literally doing everything they possibly can to help undermine our constitutional republic? I honestly believe that they should be paying for their own personal security details. The only place that they should probably have maybe some minimum security would be on their home, on their primary residence, and that would be it. You want to travel, you want to get out and about, then as far as we the people are concerned, you should have to pay for you going out and speaking and making money as the fallout or as a benefactor of your being president. If you're going to be making that money, you're going to go out and speak in nations, just like George W. or H.W. Bush did. I remember he went out and talked a lot about the, you know, the New World Order. I mean, there were plenty of talks and speeches that he gave around the world about the New World Order. I don't think that the American people should be paying for his travel and his security and all of those things. I think that if you want to do that, do it on your own dime. And oh, by the way, let's go back to that Tory Act. Anybody that is absolutely out there trying to undermine our constitutional republic, they ought to be kicked out of this country anyway. And even if you're next president, that doesn't mean that you're beyond the law, that you should be held accountable for upholding the Constitution, protecting it, and defending it. That is the oath of a citizen. It's one thing for you to get into theory of thinking about something that, you know, is like communism and talking about it. But when you're out there actually calling for people and calling, like Obama is, for doing things, violating the law and trying to undermine our system, then as far as I'm concerned, I think that these people ought to be shipped out, period. That simple. So as I get into the ratification debates, the one question I want to ask is, and this is an important question, I'm asking you, are the words in our founding documents that I am citing the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system for about a century, and the words that we hear from our progressive college professors and teachers and lawyers and politicians and bureaucrats, are they the words of deceit? Who is lying to us because something isn't jiving? We have a real problem here, folks, because what I am reading out of these founding documents has nothing to do with what we've heard. I can remember Megan, what was her name on Fox? Anyway, the blonde Megan that thought she knew something about the Constitution. I remember she was lecturing while she had her editorial show on Fox. She was lecturing Governor Abbott of Texas about the Constitution, the Convention of States. And even though I'm not an advocate for the Convention of States, she was basically asserting that he knew nothing of the Constitution because that's not what the Constitution said. And what she was asserting was literally a bunch of lies. And so at that point, it was very obvious to this person that she was a deceiving progressive, literally trying to obfuscate the truth and trying to hoodwink her audience into believing that she knew what she was talking about when obviously she didn't. Now let me move forward here, and I'm going to get into Mr. Nicholas, and this is found on page 273 out of the ratification debates. And this is when he gets up and replies to Mr. Pendleton, or actually a different person in the debate who had basically completely forgot what Mr. Pendleton and Madison had talked about. And so they kept on repeating certain things. And the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, in a way, were almost like the progressives. They really did not want to see their little cabal being broken up, the little controls that they had at the state being broken up. And in all honesty, none of those cabals or the state's powers were being broken up at all. The honesty is that you would find that in the constitutional ratification debates during these dialogues going back and forth, they kept on repeating the same falsehoods, almost like Democrats. The Federalists, and there's no doubt in my mind, when Madison and Nicholas were speaking, what they were speaking was legitimately honest about what this contract was and its limitations. There is no evidence at any point in time beyond this or even before this that these guys were lying or trying to deceive the states in surrendering their authority to this federal government. And it was just a very limited authority, as they kept on asserting. So what Mr. Nicholas says here, and he quotes, and in reply to the gentleman opposed to the clause under debate, went over the same grounds and developed the same principles which Mr. Pendleton and Mr. Madison had done. The opposer of the clause, which gave the power of providing for the general welfare, supposed in dangers to result from its connection with and extension of the powers granted in the other clauses. He endeavored to show the committee that it only empowered Congress to make such laws as would be necessary to enable them to pay the public debts and provide the common defense. Nicholas goes on that this general welfare was not united not to the general power of legislation, but to the particular power of laying and collecting taxes, imposts, and excises. Remember that word impost? That's what I was talking about earlier. We have a constitutional duty of applying imposts, and we should be using imposts, an automated form of impost, on every nation that's coming in and wants to play shenanigans in trade. Moving on, quote, for the purpose of paying debts and providing for the common defense, that is, they could raise as much money as would pay the debts and provide for the common defense in consequence of this power. The clause which was affectedly called the sweeping clause, which is the necessary and proper clause, contained no new grant of power. To illustrate this position, he observed that it had been added at the end of every one of the enumerated powers instead of being inserted at the end of all. It would be obvious to anyone that it was no augmentation of power. If, for instance, at the end of the clause granting power to lay and collect taxes, it had been added that they should have power to make necessary and proper laws to lay and collect taxes, who could suspect it would be an addition of power, as it would grant no new power if inserted at the end of each clause? It could not when subjoined to the whole. And so what's really interesting is how they go back and forth. And I want to give you a little side note as well, because this is really, really important. When the states were actually ratifying, and the states, so New York, Governor Clinton, and in Virginia, I believe it was Governor Henry. Henry was definitely involved in the upper ups. And if you go through the history of Virginia at the time of the constitutional ratification and going into the first session of Congress, the Virginia leadership of politics, Henry and his cabal, were definitely anti-constitutionalist. And same thing with Clinton. And that's why they actually submitted right there, I believe it was the end of May or early June, both Virginia and New York had called for constitutional convention to amend the Constitution, which literally helped Madison get his Bill of Rights through Congress. And it really stifled both Virginia and New York's efforts in trying to get other states to join them. But the point I'm trying to bring out is that Virginia and many of the other states were very hostile and adversarial. The political leaders were really against this federal government, or I should say the Constitution, and enumerating these very specific powers. If you peel back the onion and you start looking at every single thing that is not enumerated, and we get back to literally the federal government abiding by the Constitution and exercising only those things that are enumerated within the Constitution, the Federalists were right and the Anti-Federalists were wrong. Now, granted, there was a blind faith and trust when John Marshall started making assertions. And oh, by the way, I have some John Marshall quotes coming up. Oh, but I'm also at a hard break, so I wanted to get into this. So I will summarize what I'm trying to say regarding these hostile forces towards the Constitution when we get back from this break. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And as I was saying, there are way too many people that I hear. I was on Bob Zadig's radio show, and he wrote a book called The Anti-Federalists Were Right. And I've heard lots of people basically, you know, claim that the Anti-Federalists were right. Being one that has actually read the ratification debates, I'm here to tell you that the Federalists' assertions in these ratification debates are spot on. The Anti-Federalists were misrepresenting the facts. They weren't correct. Now, granted, there have been ways, and the real bottom line is that the reason our Constitution has been compromised and the reason the federal government has been assuming is because there have been lies. Because, bottom line, the federal government has used the Supreme Court, has used Congress, and has used the president to overreaching, and they've been working together. They've been colluding in assuming more unconstitutional powers for well over 200 years, period. Now, the fact is that the states had the obligation, and as a matter of fact, in 1798, Madison and Jefferson wrote the playbook on what to do with encroachments. If you do not understand, and I know I haven't done it yet, so I will read Federalist Paper number 49. Go out and read Federalist Paper number 49 for yourself. That is the basis of what Madison and Jefferson did in 1798. The Convention of States folks, the project of Convention of States, though, these people that are calling for an Article 5 convention, trying to get the states to basically call for this convention, they're misrepresenting the facts, and they are using deceit as well as the Democrats. I don't know who to trust anymore other than those people that say, you know what? We need to first, our priority first must be getting to compliance, getting the federal government within compliance to the Constitution. Let's figure out what we need to do beyond that. What can the states really do for themselves, and do the states need to start creating their own polities or separate polities? What is a polity? A polity is a government. And so when the Constitution was created, it created a polity called the general government, or what most people call the federal government. Now, there is no reason why the states don't start creating their own polities, and I would recommend that they don't put everything into one polity. If you want to have a Department of Transportation, create a polity for that. Maybe it's a commission. Maybe it is a miniature little Congress, and you put it out in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you put your when the energy comes back to the states, and say you want to have your own policies and strategies for energy for the republic. Create a polity that literally just handles that. You do not want to create a single federal government again. Have we not learned our lesson? That way we can keep everything into the scope of a very myopic mission for each of these polities. I know it seems like a lot, but here is the wisdom in doing something like this. By allowing these things to be remote in all different stretches of the United States, it no longer becomes a single point interest for lobbyists to be able to go from one door to the next to the next. Why is it that we feel obligated to make things easier for the lobbyists to be able to go from the Department of Transportation into the Department of Energy, into the Department of Education, into the Department of Homeland Security, blah, blah, blah? If we want to have the, if the states choose to have polities and to try to collectivize policies and strategies for the republic, which would be wise to do, don't amend the Constitution and give these powers to the federal government. The federal government is perfect in its design to be outward facing in dealing with the foreign affairs that the republic needs to be engaged in. We do not want them engaged in any domestic issues. That's why that polity should be myopic in that outward facing national security, that type of thing. Everything else, Homeland Security, do we want to have a justice system? Do we want to have, I mean, these are the questions that the states actually have to grow up, become the adults again, and actually decide what they want to do and whether it's worth doing these things. And if it is, then there are ways of doing that by setting up polities, but it's highly recommended that they do not allow these polities to be established all in a central location. As a matter of fact, there's no reason why one state or one geographical region would benefit instead of allowing the rest of the republic to having the benefits of these different polities. You know, we've got plenty of states we can start setting these things up in, and everybody would have a, you know, a little piece of the action, if you want to say, if you want to call it that. But that to me would be the logical way of doing this. And I just wanted to go into this because there's way too many people that are harping the anti-federalists were right. They weren't correct. They were misrepresenting facts, and bottom line, I think that they were being a little bit emotional and they were going overboard in asserting things. As I look at it, the Federalists were spot on. We really didn't need a Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights has caused more problems than anything else because it made it easier for the states to literally start resting on their laurels and starting to trust the federal government. And as soon as they did that, the federal government started running rickshaw over the republic. Now, this is Madison. This quote right here is from Madison, and this is on page 343. And Madison says, "I have observed that gentlemen suppose that the general legislature will do everything mischievous they possibly can, and that they will omit to do everything good which they are authorized to do. If this were a responsible supposition, their objections would be good. I consider it reasonable to conclude that they will be readily do their duty to deviate from it. Nor do I go on the grounds mentioned by gentlemen on the other side that we are to place unlimited confidence in them and expect nothing but the most exalted integrity and sublime virtue." I mean, Madison's so on right here. "But I go on this great Republican principle, that the people will have virtue and intelligence to select men of virtue and wisdom. Is there no virtue among us? If there not be, we are in a wretched situation." Now, you have to ask yourself today, is there any virtue among us? When you see Maxine Waters continually being elected, Nancy Pelosi, there's no virtue in those women. at least not in the politics and in their ideologies, there is no virtue. And so I go on. And Madison says, quote, "No theoretical checks, no form of government can render us secure. To suppose that any form of government will secure liberty or happiness without any virtue in the people is a chimerical idea. If there be sufficient virtue and intelligence in the community, it will be exercised in the selection of these men so that we do not depend on their virtue or put confidence in our rulers, but in the people who are to choose them." And so he says a mouthful right there, but the fact of the matter is that Madison did not foresee, and the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists were right in this one case, that the Supreme Court would start reaching over its boundaries. And as a matter of fact, Madison said that if that happens, if they start encroaching on legislation, that let the legislature go read Federalist Paper 49. When these things were supposed to occur, the legislatures were supposed to actually say, hey, these guys are encroaching upon us. They were supposed to keep each other honest, but they didn't. They started working together in colluding. And so the states had this mechanism of calling for, and in Federalist 49, they call it a convention, but what it really comes down to in today's vernacular is republic review. The states can audit the Constitution, call out the federal government for their encroachments, and demand that they get back into compliance, or they will use force, and constitutional force, not weaponry force and a revolution type of force, but they have constitutional force in forcing the federal government into compliance, period. Now, I have another long quotation here from Madison, but I've only got a little over a minute. And so I don't want to, you know, get this started and not be able to finish, because these quotes are just so valuable. When you read the Federalist Papers, they were very interesting indeed. But I truly believe that the ratification debates have far more gold, and the reason they have there's nothing but gold in these ratification debates, and that's strictly because they were providing the arguments, the definitions, and the clarifications that literally are legally binding. Whenever you negotiate a contract, and whenever the parties sit down and they go, we believe that this line means this, and if it is agreed upon that that's what that means, and the contract is accepted based on those definitions, based on those clarifications, based on those elucidations, then bottom line, those elucidations, definitions, and so forth are legally binding to the contract. That is how you can amend a contract without even touching the contract. It only occurs at the beginning of that contract. Now, I want to go into the amendment process as well, because when you go into an amendment to the Constitution, when they start discussing in Congress and at the states, they literally are opening up the contract and they start defining what this is going to do and how this is going to do it. This is why the 17th Amendment is so important. And I'm going to lead off on the 17th Amendment on Monday. So you're definitely going to want to tune in so that you can understand what happened with the 17th Amendment and what they didn't define and why this is really big. And so I will be back on Monday. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm reclaiming the Republic, but I need your help. Thank you so much for tuning in, and get the word out. We'll be back on Monday. God bless. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.